in existence. But we'll listen to a few of them now, so sit back, relax, and find some place where you can enjoy a bit of spoken word entertainment here on CITR 101.9 FM.
I'm going away. Look into my eyes. The last Sunday of every month from 11 to 5. Won't you hear with me?
Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you a story of murder in the Roaring Twenties, the Windy City Six, starring Mr. Fred McMurray and featuring Rhett Nichols and his five pennies. Before our play begins, here is a word about Autolite from our good friend, Harlow Wilcox.
Well, hello, Senor Wilcox.
Greetings, Pepito, my popular purveyor of potent and peppery plates. How goes?
Who knows? I am too filled with excitement
Like an Autolite stay-full battery is filled with quick, dependable starting power and long life?
Sí.
Well, why the glee, my merry muchacho? Could it be your Autolite stay full, the battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use?
Sí, amigo, because with it, I never worry.
And what's more, Pepito, the Autolite stay full gives longer life, as proved by tests conducted according to accepted life cycle standards.
This is longer than my father's siesta.
Ah, there's no siesta with the Autolite stay full, Pepito. Those fiberglass mats protecting every positive plate prevent shedding and flaking. And keep the stay-full power filled for you.
For me?
Sure. You and every motorist who visits his neighborhood Autolite battery dealer for an Autolite stay-full, the battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use. Because you're always right with Autolite.
And now, with the Windy City Six and the performance of Mr. Fred McMurray, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
It all happened some time ago. By some time, I mean those days when moonlight on the Ganges was a must at the country club dance, when our nurse was considered snappy repartee, when it wasn't entirely unfashionable to be seen in a raccoon coat complete with flask when the Harvards and the Yales met in deathless combat. Maybe it'll lose a little something in the translation, but it's worth a try. Anyway, as it happened, we were playing in a little pad on Oriole Street. Crazy Jack Fisher's high hat. It was a speech, but then what wasn't at that time? When the breeze was off the river, you could hear the riff notes of the Windy City Six blowing uptown. Reading from left to right, there was Corny Peters on horn, Rip Jackson on alto, Thurber Jones on the licorice, Dinkle Hobson on the Baldwin, Red Moore slapping, and me on the skins. I'm Carstairs Hamilton, sometimes known as Rimshot, but more often as Hand. So we'll keep it that way. Yeah, Corny?
You booted the beat three times in that last set. What is it?
Well, every time I slide a glim over that skirt of table 13, my kicker skips a beat. Maybe my sticks caught the fever.
Oh. Well, those two playboys with her are Bull Hurley and Red Rock Sparrow. They get ready to whistle again. They want to talk with you.
Talk with me?
That's what they said. Go on now. Keep the customers happy.
Oh, okay, Corny. Somebody said you wanted to see me. I guess maybe it was a mistake, so I'll just...
It wasn't no mistake. Sit down.
Yes, sir.
See this girl?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't think I ever noticed her. How do you do?
Hello.
You've been staring at her all night, and last night, and the night before.
Oh, I might have been looking this way, but I'm nearsighted.
You ought to be in George White's scandals. Now, let me give it to you straight, Bad Ears. We're taking care of this girl for a very particular friend. So lay off her, huh? Because if you don't, your poor old mother's going to have some place to take flowers on Sunday afternoon. Your grave.
Back at my drums, I tried not to look at the girl, but I could still see her in my mind. Soft, dark hair. None of that shingled bob stuff. A real Marcel finger wave. A warm young face, lots more that curved down into a fur coat that must have sent somebody back a whole truckload of upstate scotch. Once in a while, I sneaked a quick peek, and every time she was looking at me. And suddenly I got scared, and I lost up a couple of beats. Pony got so mad, he blew up. But it didn't make much difference then. Our engagement was over. Veterans all, we, the Windy City Six, broke legs, went into Plan B. I headed for the kitchen. That was always the best way out. In the hallway, a small blonde guy was lifting a couple of shaking hands to his face, and his eyes grew as large as two hard-boiled eggs just before he got it. When I got out the kitchen door, I could still see that big, black-haired, vicious-looking guy peering out into the night, trying to see who it was that passed him in the hall while he was busy killing. I hope he hadn't seen my face. I ran for a while, and then I slowed down to a walk. The first few snowflakes of winter were starting to fall, and the world was pulling on that Wonderland slipover. I turned my Chesterfield collar up around my neck and noticed I was still holding a pair of drumsticks. I thought it over for a minute. Then I threw them into the darkness beyond the streetlight. I made up my mind that from now on I was going to stay out of joints like the hi-hat. When I finally got back to my rooming house, there was a surprise and a fur coat waiting for me, sitting on the front stoop. I tried to ignore her.
You blind or something? I suppose you get dozens of girls sitting on your step and I waiting for you. Hey.
Huh? Oh. Were you looking for me?
What do you think I've been sitting out here in the cold for? Selling subscriptions to the Police Gazette? Sit down.
Won't you come inside?
It's safer out here. I haven't forgotten the way you were looking at me at the hi-hat.
Oh. Say, tell me, how'd you get out of that raid so quick?
How do you think? I was with Red Rock's fellow. They don't touch him.
Oh, yeah, of course. Mind telling me your name?
Carly. Two E's.
Two E's, huh? Pretty. Tell me, Cora, what do you want with me? How'd you find my place?
Crazy Jack gave us the address. Bell and Hurley sent me to get you.
To get me? Look, I don't know anything. I didn't see anything. I told you I was nearsighted. 2040.
They got a place up in the mountains. They decided to throw a holiday party. They want a band. Isham Jones was busy, so all you guys are being picked up.
I lost my drums.
Don't worry. They'll get drums. Let's go.
Are you going with me?
Somebody has to show you the road.
Alone?
Look, we can talk all about it on the way. And don't get any ideas, because I might send for reinforcements. And these reinforcements will make a marine landing look like Isidore Duncan's finale. You got anything brave to say?
I'll bet you I'm ready before you can count to 100. By twos. I put the chains on my old Marmon, buttoned up the isinglass curtains, cracked a bottle of antifreeze, and we started off. The snow was swirling down faster than ever and was better than 3 inches deep by the time we were 40 miles out of town. Cora was under a blanket, cuddled up next to me like she meant it, her head on my shoulder. But it wasn't as romantic as it sounds, because under the blanket, Cora was shaking. And it was the kind of shaking you don't get from being cold, but from being scared. I should have known then that something was terribly wrong, but I had to learn the hard way. Cora?
Huh?
Cora, why do you hang around with bozos like Red Rock Sparrow and Bull Hurley for?
For the same reason you play in places like the hi-hat. The best offer I got. Also the worst.
Look, suppose I just kept going now. Somewhere out west, Chicago maybe. Would you go with me?
They'd never let us get away with it.
What do we lose trying? You don't belong with those guys. You belong where the air is clean and you only take a drink when you want to and love when you...
Please, don't.
What's the matter? Did I say something wrong?
Look, why don't you hit me on the head and throw me out and just keep going?
Throw you out? Of course, I wouldn't throw you out to save my life.
Oh, Hen, don't say that.
About an hour later, we passed through the town of Norrisburg and arrived at a big private estate called Haywill Manor. The big party was going strong. The rest of the Windy City Six boys had preceded me, all under escort. The door was the one person I never wanted to see again. When I'd seen him last, he was killing a man at the High Hat.
Well, Cora, I see you got him. You got a pretty smart way of leaving a raid in a hurry, sonny. Kitchen door. I hope nothing happens to your luck.
Kitchen door? I didn't go out the kitchen door. I always leave by the basement window.
I hope for your sake you're right, sonny.
Mike, he's a genuine nice guy.
Well, nice guy. I think you'll like this party. Lots of drinks, lots of girls, and lots of happy music, huh?
Oh, sure. I'll do my best. Did you get my drums?
Don't worry about drums. We don't have them. We'll give you a couple of skulls to be there. Now go on, pour yourselves a drink and get warm.
Cora, who is he?
Big Mike Donovan. This is his place. He's to the rackets what Dempsey is to boxing.
Yeah? Well, I'm going to tell you something about him. I hear the human life means nothing to him, that he'd kill anyone.
So you heard it. Don't go broadcasting it all over the place. You want to stay alive, don't you?
Well, it's always been one of my chief aims in life.
Then keep what you know under your hat, you dumb drummer.
Big and it was bouncy. Cora was sitting in a corner looking scared. Big Mike Donovan, Bull Hurley, and Red Rock Farrell were gathered at the bar drinking an uncommon amount of liquor and looking our way every time they wanted to laugh. Herbert Jones began to get nervous and his clarinet developed an off-key squeak. Three men put down their drinks and came over.
Which one do you think it is, Bull?
I got $10 if it's a saxophone player. He's got a shifty look.
Yeah, I'll take the bet. I don't think he's the guy. Which one would you pick out, Red Rock?
Well, the drummer. Yeah, he's afraid to look at us.
I think you're wrong, too. I put my money on a clarinet player. It's elementary. Every time he looks over at us, he shakes. Every time he shakes, he squeaks in the high notes. Are these the signs of a guy who don't know nothing?
Maybe you're right, Mike. Look at him shake now.
Hey, you, with the clarinet...
Yes, Mr. Donovan?
What's your name?
Jones, sir. Thurber Jones.
Well, Thurber Jones, me and Bull and Red Rocks think you're a lousy clarinet player.
I'm doing my best, sir.
We got an idea we can show you how to play it better. Come with us, sir.
I'll do better, sir, if you'll just...
I said, come with us.
Hey, wait a minute. They walked outside, and that was the last time I ever saw Thurber Jones alive. The rest of us were as jumpy as cats, and we played for 2 hours without a break. Everybody was getting stoned, but I didn't dare take a drink. Then Big Mike called an intermission while they served the buffet dinner. But everybody was so drunk that nobody ate much. Big Mike began to be loud and noisy, and he started waving a gun around, boasting what a great shot he was. He kicked open a couple of French windows. And out in the lawn, of all things, stood a giant snowman.
Just watch. Just watch. I'll blast every lousy button off his lousy chest.
He did it all right. Four pieces of coal shattered and vanished into the snow. Everybody cheered and then turned back to the food and drinks. Everybody, that is, but me. I couldn't take my eyes off the snowman.
because running down its crystal white front was red blood.
Mr. Fred McMurray with Red Nichols and his Five Pennies in the Windy City Six. Tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Hey, Senor Wilcox, how about a tortilla?
Why, sure, Pepito. I'm always talking to you about that great Autolite Stay Full battery.
How about a tamale?
Why wait till tamale? Today and every day, you'll get quick, dependable starts with the Autolite Stay Full battery, the battery that needs water only 3 times a year in normal car use.
Well, enchilada, maybe?
Your Aunt Chilada, your Uncle Manuel, and Grandpa, everybody loves the Autolite Stay Full. The battery that gives longer life, as proved by tests conducted according to accepted life cycle standards.
What glass of tequila, senor?
Fiberglass, Pepito, because fiberglass retaining mats protect every positive plate of the Autolite Stay Full battery to reduce shedding and flaking, and keep the Stay Full power packed for perfect propulsion.
But what is this in English?
It means visit your neighborhood Autolite battery dealer for an Autolite Stay Full. The battery that needs water only 3 times a year in normal car use. And remember, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Fred McMurray in Elliot Lewis's production of The Windy City Six, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
During the years of the Big Thirst, homicide was an art. Sometimes it was Tommy guns against a wall, sometimes it was a concrete overshoe in the bottom of the East River, or maybe an ice pick in the heart. But out on the snow-swept lawn of Big Mike Donovan's mansion that cold December night, I was looking at the chilliest bit of murder any crazy hooligan ever thought up. A bleeding snowman. Only now it wasn't a snowman.
You better get back inside. You'll freeze out here. Oh.
Yeah. It's Thurber, Cora. Thurber Jones.
Oh, poor little guy.
He played the sweetest clarinet he used to say in St. Louis. He was always loaning money to guys. He loved everybody. He never hurt a soul.
Who did it, Ham?
Who did it? Who else but your playmate, Donovan?
But why, Ham? Why?
You tell me why. You helped bring all of us up here, didn't you?
Oh, but not for this. Believe me, Ham, not for this.
I suppose you don't know that Mike Donovan killed a man in a high hat tonight.
Well, I heard him bragging about it a while ago with somebody who hijacked a truckload of Mike's liquor.
Well, somebody saw him. And I guess he figured it was one of us.
Who saw it?
I guess he thought it was Thurber.
You mean it wasn't?
I don't mean anything. I'm getting cold. Why don't you go back inside and join your killers?
Ham.
Go on. You work this side of the street for all the laughs you're going to get.
Oh, Ham, I'm not the same as they are. I don't blame you for thinking what you do, but I wish you wouldn't.
Yeah, all right. Let's just say the jury's still out on you.
Look, I'll prove to you I'm not like them. Here, you'll need a fast car.
What are these for?
They're the keys to Mike's car. It's in the garage. Take it down to Norrisburg and come back with all the cops you can find.
Hey, Bernie.
That's Mike.
Cora.
That's Mike.
Where are you?
Oh, hurry, please, go. I want them to get what's coming to them. I want them to get it good.
Yeah, but what about you?
Hey, Cora, who are you talking to out there? Come on back to the party, baby.
Go on, before all of you wind up like Thurber.
After she'd gone inside with Mike, I made a beeline for the garages and back. Just as I got the keys in the ignition, somebody...
In case you don't know it, Flea Brain, this is Mike Donovan's car.
Oh? Well, I guess I must have made a mistake. Hey, take that gun off my head, will you?
Mike hires me to do nothing but sit in the back seat of his car. Now I might get a raise.
Yeah, well, I always like to see somebody get ahead. The gun.
I might get a raise because Mike wouldn't like you to leave his party without first you telling him what a nice time you had.
Oh, you got me wrong. I was going to write him a bread and butter letter first thing in the morning, honest. Well, about the gun.
Shut up before I shove it through your stinking skull. I start walking.
The next thing I remember was being kicked through the door of the big house. The party kept right on whirling, and nobody paid much attention. Nobody except the boys in the band, and they were beginning to get the idea. Slowly, they stopped playing, and then people began to turn around and look. It reminded me of a ring of faces about to watch a hanging.
What's this all about, Chick?
The creep here tried to lift your car. He even had the keys.
Where'd you get him?
I sort of found him.
Hey, you can't do that to one of my...
Shut up, you. I said, where did you get him?
I told you I found him.
Where did you get him?
I didn't care whether I lived or died right then. And when somebody kicked me twice in the kidneys, the choice was made for me. I was sure I died because everything went black. When I came to, I was still lying in the same place, and the party was still going on. Nobody even looked at me as I staggered to my feet and wiped the blood and the booze and the glass off the best I could. I stood there holding onto the bar, wondering what to do. Wondering what it was all about.
Can you still walk, stupid?
Huh? Yeah, I guess so.
And Charleston, back your drums and stop playing.
Okay.
You know something, Blockhead? I didn't want him to stop. I think Big Mike's got something special in mind for you later.
None of the boys in the band even looked at me when I got back to my drums and picked up the beat. Corny and Rip and Tinkle acted as if I were dead already. We played all through our sheets twice without a break. None of us dared stop. We knew somehow we were playing for our lives.
Make that eight.
Five fizzy cups on this one.
I'll take it.
Long about dawn, the party turned into a noisy crap game, and nobody paid much attention to our background music. Cora was with them, sort of moving in and around. I saw her whisper something in Bull Hurley's ear, and then later she did the same thing to Red Rocks. Then she sort of sauntered over by the band, not looking at us, but we all heard what she said.
Boys, keep your eye on Mike Donovan. When he goes over to Red Rocks, get ready to move. It'll be your only chance to get out of here alive. Make it good.
We all looked at each other and kept right on playing, waiting to see what she was talking about. Pretty soon it began to make sense.
You dirty heel, making a pass at my girl.
I made a pass at your girl, Mike.
Just call me to you and Red Rocks both made passes at her. And I'm going to break both your necks.
Now, wait a minute, Mike.
That's our cue, boys. Everybody up.
Mike, don't forget to move the sheet.
Boys, this way. Out through this door.
Yeah, I got it. Come on.
Phew. This air feels good.
Yeah, it'll feel better 100 miles from here. Where's your car?
It's right over there, parked in front.
Come on.
Yeah, I'll be right with you. Go ahead. Cora.
Go on, get out of here. You'll never have another chance.
I'm not going without you.
Come on, Ham.
Don't just stand there. I'll be all right.
Yeah, for how long? One of those ready boys in there will start shooting his guns again and you might get in the line of fire.
What if I do? I deserve it for being so dumb.
Ham, we'll all be killed if you don't move.
Well, Cora?
I'd only get you in trouble.
Yeah, I believe you, but I want to take you anyway.
Ham, for God's sake.
Look, lady, tell him you'll come with him, please.
Oh, Ham, I wanted anything but a dumb $35 a week drum player.
Oh, I get it. Well, that tears it. I'm washed.
But I never knew how wonderful a dumb $35 a week drum player could be.
Huh?
I'm coming with you.
we all scrambled over to my Marmon and climbed in. Red and Rip in the back seat, Cora in front, me at the helm, and Corny on the crank.
Come on, baby.
What's the matter with it, Ham?
Well, it's 10 below 0. Give it another whirl.
For God's sake, make it go, Ham.
Oh, no, we can't get stuck here.
Well, just take it easy. It'll catch. There. Come on, Corny, get in. What'd I tell you? Like a Swiss watch, huh?
Let's get out of here.
Hang on, we're off. Yeah. Anybody hit?
No, but we're going to have to move faster than this.
But don't worry. I've got her souped up to where she'll go 50. Hold on. By the time we got out onto the slick, icy road, a whole car full of hooligans were coming right after us with guns blazing.
We're gaining on a town.
I didn't know anything about guns, but one thing I knew was how to handle my Marmon. It didn't weigh much, and I figured to pull into the next curve, pile the coal on, skid into the snowbank, and bounce off out of the straightaway. If that heavy roll tried to make it at the same speed and hit the snowbank, I was sure to go right on through.
Tom, look out, the curve!
Grab on, kids. This is it. Courses later, I fluttered an eyelid open and ventured a peek. Somewhere I'd miscalculated, because we were now stacked against a giant tree right on the edge of the road looking down into the valley. And down there, 100 feet below us, was a pile of something that had once been a rich, expensive automobile full of rich, cheap thugs. And around it, no one stirred.
Ham, oh, darling, are you all right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so, Cora. How about you?
I'm all right.
How about the rest of you?
I'm okay. Shaken up, that's all. I busted my lip. Look.
I'll never put my base back together again.
Yeah. At least we're all alive. Except poor Thurber. Well, what do you say we get out and take a walk into town? This is a job for the John Laws. The coda. It was the last engagement of the Windy City Six. We went out with a full arrangement and a big finish. It was in all the papers. Maybe you saw the spread. The boys on the front page, Mike Donovan and company in Vital Statistics, and Cora and me in the social columns. Yeah, we did it. Complete with old shoes and new rice. Oh, if you ever happen to get up Norrisburg Way on a curve that turns on a steep hillside, with an old scarred tree looking down into the valley, take 5 and listen. Maybe you can still hear an old clarinet squeaking on the high notes. Or if the light's right, maybe you could even catch the pale ghost of a big gunman with homicide in his eyes looking around. Looking around for a drummer who saw him kill.
Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Fred McMurray.
Ah, Pepito, that was a great meal.
And what's the matter, Senor Wilcox?
I'm too full to talk.
And if you could talk, Senor?
Then I'd tell all about the more than 400 products made by Autolite for cars, trucks, planes, and boats in 28 plants coast to coast. These include complete electrical systems used as original factory equipment on many leading makes of America's finest cars. Electric windshield wipers, starting motors, voltage regulators, coils, distributors, wire and cable, generators. All engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're a perfect team. So, friends, don't accept electrical parts supposed to be as good. Ask for and insist on Autolite original factory parts at your neighborhood service station, car dealer, garage, or repair shop. Remember, you're always right with Autolite. Next week, we celebrate the return of the First Lady of Suspense, Miss Agnes Moorehead, in a play we call The Death Parade. And then on February 22nd, in answer to your many requests, Backseat Driver, repeated for you with its original stars, Fibber McGee and Molly, all on Suspense.
Suspense. Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Are really done with politics as usual.
But then it's all about the competition.
Every Vancouverite has their own story.
The perfect time for our alternative.
Vancouver's municipal election looms. October 20th. Do you know who's running for
City Council? School Board? Parks Board?
This is a wacky municipal election, and you're going to want to stay updated. Download Seeking Office. The newest municipal elections podcast from CITR's News Collective. Find Seeking Office on iTunes and Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcasts, starting July 3rd.
In just a moment, X-1. But first, no one can deny that spring is in the air, and to prepare for the new season, NBC's Weekday brings you some timely and useful features. One is a new series with Phil and Ampey on gardening tips for both city and country dwellers. A second feature brings you hints for the best use of leisure time. And you can also bet that Joe Copeland, famous dress designer, will enlighten you on the spring fashion picture when she appears on tomorrow's show. Listen in and hear it all on NBC's Weekday tomorrow morning. And now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2. X-1. Fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, A Gun for Dinosaur, by L. Sprague de Camp.
Just whiskey, please. No soda.
Ice, Mr. Rivers?
Good heavens, no. I have been in America for some time, but not that long.
Well, to a fine dinosaur head.
Well, now, just a moment, Mr. Seligman. I won't take you hunting late Mesozoic dinosaur.
Why not?
How much do you weigh, about 9 stone?
130 pounds.
Yeah, I thought so. It's not heavy enough.
But your advertisement. You said safaris arranged to any time
period.
Well,
I'll take you to any period in the Cenozoic. I'll get you a shot at any entelodont or even mammoth or mastodon. They have fine heads. But I'll jolly well not take you to the Jurassic or the Cretaceous. You're just too small.
But what's my weight got to do with it?
Look here, old boy. What did you think you were going to shoot those dinosaurs with?
Well, I...
Look over here in this case. That's my own gun, a Continental 600. That shoots a pair of Nitro Express cartridges the size of bananas. It's designed for knocking down elephant, not just wounding them, but knocking them base over apex.
Well, now, I've handled guns.
Look, I've been guiding hunting parties for over 20 years. But I've never known a man your size who could handle a 6-0-0. It knocks him over.
Well, people have killed elephant with lighter guns, even a 375.
Yes, but consider an elephant weighs, well, let's say from 4 to 6 ton. You're planning to shoot reptiles weighing 2 to 3 times as much as an elephant. I tell you, Mr. Seligman, I won't take anybody hunting dinosaur who can't handle a 6-0-0. Look, let's pour another drink and I'll tell you why. You see, I went into the partnership with the Rajah about 5 years ago. I call him that because he's the hereditary monarch of Jaunpur. It means nothing, of course. We both wanted to do a bit of hunting again. And Africa's all played out. It's too civilized now. So when we heard of Professor Prohaska's time machine at Washington University, we caught the next plane to St. Louis. The foundation administering the machine had worked out an arrangement splitting the time between scientific parties and hunters who wanted to try their luck at prehistoric game. Hunters paid through the nose, of course, to support the project. Well, it was about our fifth safari that Courtney James showed up. He's what you chaps call a playboy, a big bloke, handsome in a way, florid, beginning to turn to fat. He was on his fourth wife. And when he showed up at the office with a blonde, I assumed that this was the fourth Mrs. James. And he left her in the outer office and corrected my assumption.
Bunny? Oh, no, she's not my wife. My wife is in Mexico, I think, getting a divorce. But Bunny here would like to go along.
I'm sorry. We don't take ladies, not to the late Mesozoic.
If she wants to go, she'll go. She skis and flies my airplane, so why shouldn't
she... There are enough risks at 85 million B.C. without adding to them. I'm sorry, but it's against the firm's policy.
Now, look here. I'm paying you a lot of money. I'm entitled...
You can't hire me to do anything against my best judgment. Now, if that's how you feel, get another guide.
All right, all right. But let me tell you.
Oh, it ended with my telling him to get out of the office or I'd throw him out. And I was thinking sadly of all that lovely money that James would have paid me. When in came another Saeed, an August Holtzinger, a slim, bald chap with glasses.
Mr. Rivers, I don't want you to think I'm here under false pretenses. I'm really not much of an outdoorsman, and I'll probably be scared to death when I see a real dinosaur.
Well, most of us are frightened at first, but it doesn't do to speak of it.
Well, you see, I've always run a grocery store till my uncle died, and, I've got a great deal of money now. And I'm building a new house. I'm engaged, you know, getting married, and, I'm determined to hang a dinosaur head over my fireplace or die in the attempt. A ceratopsian, I think. That's the one with the big horned head and the frill over the neck, isn't it?
Well, you want to think twice about that, you know. If you put a 7-foot triceratops head into a small living room, there's apt to be no room left for anything else.
I know it's ridiculous, but I'm determined to do something big for once. Since there's no more real big game hunting, I'm going to shoot a dinosaur and hang his head over my mantle. I'll never be happy otherwise.
The Rajah and I decided to make it to the Middle Cretaceous. That's about 85 million years ago. It's the best period for dinosaur in Missouri. So we drove Holtzinger into the country to let him try the 6-0-0.
It's rather heavy.
Look, you look out. There's quite a kick.
Well, couldn't you fire it prone?
Oh, not a gun that big. There's not enough give. You'd break your shoulder. All right. Take the safety off.
Like this?
Take my hand. I'll help you up.
Thank you. I think I better try something smaller.
Well, he took a fancy to my Manchester 70, chambered for a 375 Magnum cartridge. That's a little light for elephant, and very definitely light for dinosaur, but we were in a hurry. And then, of course, just before we were ready to trek, James showed up and apologized for insulting me. Pete had a run-in with the girl, and he wanted to go along. And so we were off on safari. You all ready, gentlemen?
Why, yes, I suppose so.
Mr. Holsinger, you've met my partner, the Raja of Janpur.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
Well, shall we get cracking? After you, Mr. Holsinger. Mr. James.
Oh, thank you.
Let's get going. All set.
We'll slam the hatch and off we go.
What happens?
Nothing till the force field is built up. Ah, there she goes.
What happened to the lights?
Well, there's no current while we're in transition.
I don't feel well.
There's usually a touch of vertigo. I shouldn't worry about it.
Look, what do you shoot for? I mean, with Dinosaur. What is the best shot?
Well, you don't try for his brain, you know. They don't have any. Well, to be exact, they have a little bump about the size of a tennis ball on the top of their spines. And you're not likely to hit it when it's embedded in a 6-foot skull.
Try for the heart. They have big hearts, over 100 pounds. An exploding shell in the heart will slow them down, at least.
Oh, I see.
Why do we have to go so far for game? Why couldn't we just go back 50 years and shoot lions in Africa?
Well, the machine won't work more recently than 100,000 years ago.
Why?
Well, look, I'm no four-dimensional expert on the subject, but it has something to do with what they call time paradox. You know, if people could go back to recent times, they might do something to affect history or kill their own grandfather, you know. And there's also some kind of taboo about sending people back to the same time again. Paradoxes. Mustn't have them.
What would happen?
I'm not sure, but the university isn't taking chances. They've got about a billion years to cover. They won't run out of eras. Hello? Here we go. Oh, cheers, eh? Well, that's done it. April 24th. 85 million years B.C. Now then, careful. Keep the safety on your gun. And don't shoot unless I give the word.
Why? Why should we have to wait for you?
Because I'm responsible for everything you do. Especially if something goes wrong. I say, Roger, open the door, will you? In this period, the time chamber materializes on top of a rocky rise. At the west, you see the arm of the Kansas Sea that reaches across Missouri and the big swamp where the sauropods live. To the east, the land slopes up to a plateau. It's good for ceratopsians. But the finest thing about the Cretaceous is the climate. It's balmy like the South Sea Islands. And not so muggy as the Jurassic. Oh, we sent the time chamber back off and looked about. It was spring, with the dwarf magnolias in bloom all over. Down towards the Kansas Sea, cycads and willows grew, while the uplands were covered with screwpins and ginkgo. Yeah, well, I'm no ruddy poet, but I can appreciate a beautiful scene. Well, I was looking through the haze and sniffing the air.
I got him! I got him!
What the devil?
You see it? There it goes!
Confound it, you idiot! I told you not to shoot without word from me. And what happened?
An ornithomine. Wandered out of the copse. Mr. James gave him both barrels. Missed.
Now, look here, James. One of the biggest dangers on a safari is trigger-happy sahibs who get panicky. You're not to shoot unless you're told. You understand?
Who do you think you are to tell me when to shoot my own game?
Now, look here. Firstly, if you shoot off all your ammunition before the trip is over, your gun won't be available in case of a pinch. And secondly, if you empty both barrels, what would happen if a big theropod should charge before you could reload? And finally, it's not sporting to shoot everything in sight. Is that clear?
All right. All right.
Well, now then, first task is fresh meat. As I told you, Holsinger wanted a ceratopsian head. James insisted on a tyrannosaur. Then everybody would think that he'd shot the most dangerous game. The fact is that tyrannosaur's overrated. But everybody's read about the tyrant lizard and, well, he does have the biggest head of the theropods. Oh, and he'll snap you up if he gets the chance, no fear. Oh, we started off searching for meat. The Raja and I put the sahibs in front. Yeah, we tell them it's so that they'll get the first shot, which is true, but another reason is that they're always tripping and falling with their guns cocked, and if the guy were in front, he'd get shot.
Shh. Boneheads.
Where?
See? Crouching over there. Feeding on those cycads. He's about the size of a man.
They look intelligent.
Oh, not likely. That bulge on the head is solid bone. Now then, hold on there, James. You've had your shot for the day. Hold your fire until Holzinger shoots.
Yeah, sure, sure.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Holzinger.
Doesn't matter which one.
No, here. Try that one by the rock. There's a good clear shot. Well, take your safety off.
Oh.
Go ahead now.
Well?
Shh.
I'm nuts. I've had enough of this.
James, don't.
I got him clean right through the heart. First shot. How's that?
I thought you were going to give Holzinger the first crack. It's his turn.
Well, I waited. Took so long, I thought he'd gotten buck fever.
Very well. But if this sort of thing happens once more, we leave you at camp the next time we go out. The next couple of days, we trekked around the neighborhood and then headed over to the sauropod swamp, over to the west. We were staked out along the edge of the lake, watching a big beggar out in the swamp waving his head about. And they're the big ones. It looks something like the brontosaur.
Can't we shoot him?
I wouldn't.
Why not?
Well, there's no point to it, and it's not sporting. Look, if you kill one in the water, he sinks and can't be recovered. And if you kill one on land, well, the only trophy is that little head on the top of that long neck. You can't bring that whole beast back because he weighs 30 tons or more.
That museum in New York got one.
Oh, yes. Well, they sent a party of 48 to the early Cretaceous with a 50-caliber machine gun. They spent two solid months hacking and sawing the carcass apart and hauling it to the time machine. I know the chap on the project, and he still has nightmares in which he smells decomposed dinosaur. And they also had to kill a dozen big sauropods who came in for the party. And then they had them lying around, too. They lost three men.
Reggie! Duck Bill!
Where are they?
Up there at the shoreline. Now, keep your voices down. You see? With a crest on the back of their heads.
Mr. Rivers, I've been thinking over what you said about those heads. If I could get one of those duck bills, I'd be satisfied. It'd look big enough over my mantle, wouldn't it?
I'm sure of it, old boy. Well, let's be off. Roger, you wait here with Mr. James. Shouldn't take us long. Holt and I crept along the shoreline, narrowing the range to the duck bills.
I think I can make the shot from here. I'll be ready in a minute. My shoe is loose.
He's getting away. I won't get a shot.
I'm afraid Mr. James has fired both barrels again.
James, that's the second time you spoiled my shots.
Don't be a fool. I couldn't let them wander into camp stamping everything flat.
There was no danger to that. You can see that the water is deep offshore. It's just that our trigger happy Mr. James can't see any animal without shooting.
And if it did get close, all you have to do is to throw a stick of firewood at it. They're perfectly harmless.
Well, how was I to know?
I believe I mentioned it.
Well, what are we on this miserable trip for, except to shoot things?
There are certain rules, you know.
You call yourselves hunters. I'm the only one who is hitting anything.
Now, just a moment, old man. You're behaving like a confounded skite with more money than brains. I should never have brought you along.
Well, that's how you feel. Give me some food and I'll go back to the base by myself.
Now, don't be a bigger ass than you can help. That's quite impossible.
All right, I'll go alone. I wouldn't want to pollute your air with my presence.
Yeah, that's an attractive thought, Reggie, but we can't let him go. He'll get lost or starve. All right, I'll go after him.
We stumbled along for several more days. James on his good behavior for a change. And on the 1st of May, we broke camp and headed north to the hills. That was hot and sticky. We were soon panting and sweating like horses when I picked up the smell of carrion and heard the thrumming of the flies. We found a huge ceratopsian lying dead in a little hollow on the edge of the copse. He must have weighed 6 or 8 tons alive.
Why couldn't I have gotten him before he died? That would have made a darn fine head.
Look, on your toes, chaps. The sauropod that's been at this carcass is probably nearby.
How do you know?
We see how the hide's been ripped off and the bones are scattered. Sauropods will hang around a carcass like this for weeks, gorging and then sleeping their meals off for days at a time.
What do we do?
Well, that's what we came after. Look, Roger, you take Mr. James through that way, and we'll parallel you 40 feet distant. Now, keep your eyes open. It'll be hard to see in these woods unless you're right on top of him. We pushed through the edge of the copse, looking for the huge flesh-eater who'd been at the carcass. I could hear James and the Rajah pushing ahead on my right. We were separated by a gully when I heard a noise ahead on our left.
What is it?
I don't know. Take the safety off your gun.
Oh, there it is. It's one of those boneheads.
Ah, well, they're not dangerous at any rate. But be careful. That sauropod might still be around.
I've got him! Got him clean!
Well, he's done it again. He shot the bonehead.
I've got him!
The Tyrannosaur heaved his head out of the shrubbery just in front of us. Look, the scientists can insist that Rex is bigger than Trionkes, but I'll swear that this Tyrannosaur was bigger than any Rex ever hatched. It must have stood 20 feet high and been 50 feet long. I could see its big, bright eye and 6-inch teeth. He'd been sleeping off his last meal, and James fired off both barrels over his head at the bonehead and woke the Tyrannosaur up.
Get back! Get back, you fools!
Gun's empty and Roger can't get a shot. Found it, there goes the beast in behind those ferns. Holtzinger! Holtzinger! Come back! Your gun's too light for that beggar! James came bolting back in a panic and blundered into the Rajah, sending both of them sprawling under the ferns. The Tyrannosaur came after them to snap them up. Holtzinger began to blaze away. He got off 3 shots through the beast's body with that little light gun. The Tyrannosaur whirled around to see what was stinging it. The jaws came open, and the head swung around and down again. Holtzinger got off 1 more shot and tried to leap to one side. The Tyrannosaur continued its lunge and caught him in its jaws as he fell.
Reggie! Reggie!
Stand clear!
Hart! Hart's the only chance!
It's no use! There he goes!
Try a long shot!
Ah, no, missed him clean. Poor Holtzinger.
Well, that's the end. He stopped screaming. Did you notice?
Oh, yes. Well, I expect we'd best track the beast. He might be dying. We should try to recover Holtzinger's remains.
Yes, there's nothing else to do.
No, nothing. It's a bad show all around. An hour later, we gave up and went back to the glade looking very dismal.
Where have you two been?
We were occupied. The late Mr. Holtzinger. Remember?
You shouldn't have gone off and left me. None of those things might have come along. Isn't it bad enough to lose one hunter through your stupidity?
What?
Sure, you put us in front of you, so if anybody gets eaten, it's one of us. That's...
You stinking little swine. If you hadn't been a first-class idiot and blown those 2 barrels again, this never would have happened. Holtzinger died trying to save your worthless life. And I wish he'd failed.
Oh, I ought to...
Now then, my lady buck, I'm glad you did that. It gives me a chance I've been waiting for. Now get up. And I'll be glad to finish off.
You won't finish anybody off. All right, put your hands up. Both of you.
Put that gun away. Don't be an idiot.
I won't let anybody do that to me.
You can't get away with murder.
Why not? There'll be much left of you after you're hit with a 600 explosive shell. Nobody could prove anything. They can't hold you for a murder 85 million years old. The statute of limitations, you know.
Nice work, Roger, old chap.
Yes. Cretaceous rock. Doesn't quite have the balance of a cricket ball, but it's a bit harder.
What? Well, suppose we tie this chap up and... take him back to camp. When the time transition chamber finally arrived, we fell over one another getting into it. We dumped James in a corner and threw the switches.
You two should have killed me back there.
Why? You don't have a particularly good head.
You wouldn't look at all well over a mantle.
You're going to laugh. But I'll get you someday.
Well, close quarters, isn't it?
Someday I'll find a way. I'll find a way and I'll get off scot-free, too.
My dear chap, if there was some way to do it, I'd have you charged with Holzinger's murder. Look, you'd best let well enough alone.
No, I'll kill you. Both of you. Somehow.
Cigarette, Roger.
Thanks.
When we came out in the present, we handed him his empty gun, and off he went. We paid everybody off, found that we were broke. But quite luckily, a steel manufacturer turned up who wanted a mastodon head for his den. While we were standing in the laboratory at the university waiting for the time chamber, the technician, he's a bookish chap, a theoretical, a temporal physicist, was watching his dials and scopes.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Rivers, you just missed him.
Hmm? Missed who?
That last client of yours, Mr. James.
Well, that's good luck. And what was he doing here?
Oh, he told me quite a tale. Said he'd lost his wallet back there. Said it contained some very valuable papers. Ah. It must have been valuable. He paid the university fee of $5,000 for the use of the chamber. He's on his way back there now.
Back where?
Well, he told me to send him back a few minutes before you arrived the last time. Then he could see himself drop the wallet.
He's going to stand there and watch himself come out? Yeah, but, doesn't that create what you chaps call a paradox? What happens when a man tries to occupy the same time twice?
No, we don't know. It's never been tried before. Well, we tried to warn him, but he insisted.
Yes, I know. He's a headstrong chap. Still, you wouldn't think he'd chance it just for the sake of a wallet. Was he armed?
Yes. He had a .375 Express.
.375? Well, that's odd. He knows it's too light for dinosaurs.
Yes, but not too light for a man. I say, Roger, you don't think Mr. James is lurking behind a bush back there until we show up again, planning to pot us as we step out?
That's impossible. We already did step out of the chamber and nothing happened.
Yeah, but that was before Mr. James was waiting with an express rifle cocked. Hey, Doctor?
But you mean he's planning to murder the two of you?
Oh, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I don't suppose there's anything you could do to stop the process now.
No, it's too late. The chamber's in transition now. Look, hadn't you better get out of here before he kills you?
Well, there's no point in running. If Mr. James's theory is right, we've both been dead for 85 million years. We might as well wait and see what happens.
Transition point coming up.
Well, it's been quite a world up to this point. Hey, Roger?
Yes, quite.
Here it goes.
Reggie, are you all right?
I seem to be. What happened?
The time chamber. It's back. We'd better get it open.
Good Lord, look at that.
Ghastly, isn't it? Where did it come from?
I'm not sure. But I rather think it came from the Middle Cretaceous era. Wasn't here a moment ago.
Ghastly mess. Looks as if every bone was pulverized and every blood vessel burst.
I dare say. But that's his gun, all right. It's James, there's no doubt of it. So, that's the story, Mr. Seligman. Of course, I don't understand the mathematics, but the idea's rather easy to grasp. Nobody had shot us when we first emerged on the 24th of April, 85 million BC. And so, of course, that couldn't be changed. The instant James started to do anything that would make a paradox, the space-time forces snapped him forward and ripped him to bits. Well, they know a good deal about that now, and there's a safety margin of 500 years between each trip. You can't have paradoxes, you know. It just isn't done. And you see, I'm a lot more careful now. I shouldn't have taken James when I knew what a spoiled, unstable sort he was. Or Holzinger either. when I saw that he was too small to shoot a dinosaur gun. With a heavier gun, he'd probably have knocked the tyrannosaur down and saved his own life. So, Mr. Seligman, that's why I won't take you to that period to hunt. I'm sorry, but you're just too light. You're not big enough to handle a gun for dinosaur.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the story of a man who develops a spaceship that travels so fast that its pilots vanish mysteriously into thin air. Read the Vaughn Shelton story, Point of Departure, in Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand now. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you A Gun for Dinosaur, a story from the pages of Galaxy, written by L. Sprague DeCamp, patent consultant and one of our leading authors of science fiction. It was adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Alastair Duncan, Wendell Holmes, John Gibson, Donald Buca, Warren Parker, and Alan Hewitt. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Let's visit lovable Fibber McGee and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Check test. Check test 1, 2, 3. No dead air. Keeping the airways alive for all to hear. Jazz fusion, post-rock, experimental electronic. Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Check out the Facebook page for more info at facebook.com/CITR No Dead Air.